that Rabbi Akiva lived after the time of the second, the destruction of first of the second Beis Hamikdash, but that he was associated with Bar Kokhba in the rebellion against Rome, which culminated in the year 135 of the Common Era, approximately about 132 to 135. And of course, you know that at first the Jews actually were able to drive the Romans from Eretz Israel, which was a tremendous feat because other nations had not been able to do that, you know, nations subjugated by Rome. But eventually the Romans massed all their troops from all over the Roman Empire, their best legions and so on, and little by little they were able to reestablish themselves. And then...
How long was that? How long was the period of...
the war itself was approximately about 3 years.
So Israel was free, or...
Yeah, there was a time when Israel was free during Bar Kokhba's time. As a matter of fact, he struck coins, which we still have. You know, you'll find them, let's say, in the Israel Museum, where it says, L'cheirut Yisrael, for the freedom of the people of Israel, you know, the freedom of Israel, and then it says, for example, Shana Bet or Shana Aleph or something like that.
Mm.
And we have those coins.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did they have a republic in that, those 3 years? They had their own country.
Well, they write that they, at least for a time, they enjoyed freedom from Rome.
Bar Kokhba was the leader of the country?
Yeah, he was the military leader. Rabbi Akiva was actually the leading spiritual leader of the people at that particular time, and one of the greats in Jewish history.
It was his students who were fighting too.
Yes, yes. And of course, we associate, you know, the idea of observing Sphira.
Sure.
Because so many thousands of the students died during the period between Pesach and Shavuos, or at least Pesach and Lag BaOmer and so on, that many of them died. And
was that from a plague or from the
war?
Well,
it may have been a plague, it may have been this. There are those who say that actually it was the war against Rome, but they refer to it as a plague. So at any rate, the Roman government then instituted this gezeira, this decree, against Shelo Yasku Yisrael Torah, that the people of Israel were prohibited from studying Torah. I don't have to tell you how terrible a decree this is, that the Jews were not to study Torah, because if the Jews cannot study Torah, then it means that, that's the end of Yiddishkeit. And so we have other references too in other places in the Gemara about how, for example, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, he ordained others, you know, in order to be able to make sure that there would be a spiritual leadership even after his death. And then he was pierced by hundreds of spears that the Romans hurled at him until his body became like a sieve. That's how many javelins
wounds he had.
And we'll read now about the martyrdom of Rabbi Akiva. So, at any rate, once then, the Roman government, or the wicked government, made a decree that the people of Israel should not learn Torah. Bo Pappas ben Yehuda. So Pappas ben Yehuda is a certain guy who knew Rabbi Akiva. Mitzvah Rabbi Akiva showed Markel Kehilas Barav. He came and he happened to see that Rabbi Akiva had gathered multitudes of students. The Yosek Batorah, he was teaching Torah to them. Omalei, so he said unto him, Akiva, Yatom Misyori Pnei Malchus, says to him, Akiva, aren't you afraid of the Roman government? You know, how could you dare to defy the Roman government openly the way you're doing? Omalo, so Akiva said to him, Emshalcha Mashal, I'll give you a mashal. In other words, I'll tell you a little story, a parable, so to speak, and Lamad Davidom, what is this situation like? He says, it's a shuol shahoyim ha'alechol gavanoha. It's comparable to a fox, a story about a fox who was taking a walk right near the edge of the river. V'ra'ah dogim, and he saw the fish, shahoyim miskatzim and mokim nabokim. He saw that they were gathering place to place, you know, how they hurry and scurry all around, okay? Omalahem, so the fox said to them, Yipnei ma'atem borchim, why are you fleeing? Omulo, so they said to him, Ibnei Rishoso Shemavin Alim Benayot, says, we're fleeing because of the nets that human beings, you know, cast to catch us. Omalahem, so he said to them, וצונכם שתעלו ליבוש ונודר אני ויאתם כשם שדור אביסיים אביסיכם. Said, how about you, literally, would you like to, right? Would you like to come up on the dry land? And you and I will live together even as our ancestors lived together. My ancestors lived together with your ancestors. In other words, back in the Garden of Eden, when nobody was doing any harm to each other, any of the creatures, so, you know, the animals, the fish were all together. So how about it? Proposition. You come up on the dry land, I'll take care of you, I'll keep an eye of you, and everything will be just like in paradise back in the days of old. So they said to him, Atohu she'omim v'lecha pikeh shebachayos. You're the one that they say is the most cunning
of
all the animals. Lo pikeh chato, you're not cunning. Of course the word pikeh means wise. It has various meanings, but it means wise, cunning, whatever you want to say. Because the word that the Torah used for cunning is orum, but I feel that over here, cunning or wise, cunning is a little bit wiser, you know.
More applicable.
To use, it's more applicable. Lo bikeach ata, you're not wise, ela tipesh ata, you're a fool. Uma bimekom chayusenu ana misyorim. Just as, look, when we are in our own living environment, and still we have reason to be fear, we have reason to fear, in the call misaseinu, in the place where it means, of course, certain death to us, alachas kama v'chama, all the more reason why we should be afraid, you know, to come up on the dry land and be with you. We need, the water is our natural environment, and that's the way it is. So, afanachnu achshav, so we, Achshav Shona Yoshim Yoshim HaTorah, as long as we sit, of course, this is what Akiva says, as long as we sit and we study Torah, Shekosav Bo, concerning which the Torah, you know, it says, Kihu Chayecho V'Yorach Yomecho, that it is the Torah which is our life and gives us length of days. In other words, we live because of Torah, right? So likewise, if we would go and cast it aside, alachas kama v'chama, all the more so that we would die. Omru, so they said, there's, you know, in telling the story about Rabbi Akiva, they said, lo hoyu yomim mu'otim, not many days passed, very few days passed, ad shetfasil to Rabbi Akiva, until they arrested Rabbi Akiva, and they literally bound him in the prison. In other words, they incarcerated him in prison. Okay? V'tapsu the papas ben Yehuda v'chavashu etzlo. And lo and behold, who else did they arrest? They arrested papas ben Yehuda. And they put him into incarceration right next to Rabbi Akiva. Okay? They incarcerated him together. Omaloi, so Akiva said to him, papas, how did you get over here? In other words, why are you in prison? After all, you're the one who warned me not to provoke the Roman government. So how come you're in prison? Omalei, so Papas's answer was, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva says, oh, blessed are you, Rabbi Akiva, shenispasto divrei Torah, that you were arrested because you wanted to propagate words of Torah. Oy lo le papas, but woe unto me, papas, he said, shenispas adavorim betelem, that I was arrested for things of vanity, and that's why they put me into prison. I mean, obviously he committed some sort of a crime in the eyes of the Roman government, but you know, it wasn't for
religious
reasons that he was put in over there. And he realizes now that all his avoidance studying Torah and everything else was to no avail, because he still wound up here in prison. B'shosho tziyu es Rabbi Akiva laharego, the time when they came and they brought Rabbi Akiva to the executioner, zaman kriyashma hoyo, it happened to be the time also to recite Krishna. V'hoyu sorkim es b'sor masreko shabazel, and they were literally raking his flesh or combing his flesh with iron combs. In other words, they took these combs that are made out of iron and they just tore shtiklach, you know, from his his skin and his flesh and so on. V'hoyu mekabel olav o malchus shemayim. And he took upon himself the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. In other words, he started then to recite Kriya Shema. He submitted to the will of God and recited Kriya Shema. Amru lo tamidav. So his disciples who were there and watching what was happening, they said to him, Rabbeinu ad kam, our master, even at this particular point when they're tearing your flesh, you know, and you're suffering such great agonies, you still are reciting the Shema. Amalahem, so he said to them, Kol yomai hayisin etzoy lapasuk zeh. All the days of my life, I was sorry. In other words, I felt sorrow because of this particular verse. Bechol nafshecho, right? With all your soul means afilu no teles nishmasech. Even if he takes your soul. In other words, even if God has, you know, takes you in death. Omarti, and I said to myself, when will this ever happen to me that I can fulfill the Chol Nafshecha, that I am willing to offer up my soul for the sake of the Rebbeinu Shalom? The Yachshav Shebole Yodi Lo Akamenu, and now that this opportunity has been given to me, shall I not fulfill this opportunity? Shall I not fulfill it? You know, in other words, the opportunity to die as a martyr and proclaim God is one. And then the story continues and says that he prolonged the word echod until his soul departed. In other words, he died reciting the word echod.
Isn't this recounted in Yom Kippur?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in Yom Kippur we have in the Musaf of the prayer, the Eila Eskara and so on, yeah. There we talk about the martyrdom of, you know, the 10 famous martyrs at the hands of the Romans, and of course one of them is the story about Rabbi Akiva. Of course there it's only alluded, it's alluded to just like a line or two or something like that, but here is the source of the story of the martyrdom of Rabbi Akiva. Yotzos Baskol, so a heavenly voice went, the Omron proclaimed, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, Shiyotso Nishmoso Biyechot. Blessed are you, Rabbi Akiva, that your soul departed from you with the word Echot. Omru Malachi Yosher Zayakodish Boruchu. So the ministering angels said to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, they said, Zu Torah, Vizu Sechora. This is the reward, in other words, for studying Torah, that you have to die for it. Mimsim yotcha Hashem mimsim. The pasuk in Tehillim says, you see, mimsim actually means people. But of course, you recognize in it that it looks very much like what?
Mesim,
right. Mm-hmm. Or mimis means, to put to death, yes. Or take, So, mimsim yotcha Hashem mimsim. Your hand, O God, is causing the death. So, Omalehem, so he said to them, what's the rest of the pasuk? The pasuk continues and it says, Chelkom b'chayim. Their portion is in life. In other words, their portion is life eternal. Those people who die for the sake of heaven, they will inherit, they will merit life eternal. Yotzos Habas Kol Biyomro, so a heavenly voice then proclaimed, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, She'atom Uzmon L'chai Olam Haba. Blessed are you, Rabbi Akiva, that you are summoned to the life of the world to come. Now the next section, as we'll see, deals with laws of how to respect the Har Habayis. If we go back to the Mishnah at the beginning of the chapter, we'll see that there is a reference to various things over there, which in the course of the next week or two, we'll go into greater detail. But if you'll take a look at the very end, it says, Lo yekal odem es rosha keneged shaar mizrach. It says a person should not act with contempt, so to speak, or, to take lightly, literally, is what it says. When he faces the eastern gate, Shehu Mechuvan Keneged Beis Kodshei HaKadoshim, which is positioned opposite the Holy of Holies. And then it says afterwards, V'lei Kanis L'Harabayis V'Nakol V'Noli V'Dosei, that a person should not enter the Har Habayis carrying his stick or wearing shoes or with his purse or the Ovek Shal Raglov or with the dust upon his feet, right? Then another thing that says, V'lei Asenu Kapanriya, you're also not to make the Har Habayis, the Temple Mount, a Kapanriya. Kapanriya over here means like don't use it as a shortcut from one place to another. And it says further, Urakikon HaKal V'Chomer, and of course you're not allowed to spit on the Har Habayis.
Mm-hmm.
This goes without saying, you can't do the other things. That's the reason that this does postish, you know. Yeah.
Here, it's back at the beginning of
the,
so that's the middle beginning. Good evening, Arthur. How are you? Coming to study with us?
This is the Brotherhood meeting.
No.
No. There's a Brotherhood meeting?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there is a Brotherhood meeting.
Oh, you mean a board meeting?
Meeting with a Brotherhood.
No. Yeah. Nundala.
I don't even remember getting a phone call from Teddy.
But they knew you'd be busy.
Okay. All right.
So,
so now we refer to the first part of the Mishnah over there, which says Lo Yokel Odom Esrosh Keneged Shara Nizrach Shehu Mechuvan Keneged Beis Kodshei Kodoshim. Okay. Now, those of you who have been to Yerushalayim, you're of course familiar to a certain extent with, you know, how the Temple Mount is positioned. Okay. The east of the Har Habayis faces two mountains over there. One is called the Har HaZesim, or Har HaZetim, if you want to use the Israeli pronunciation. That's the Mount of Olives. And the other one, just to the north of it, of the Har HaZetim, is the Har HaTzofim. Or in English, they call it Mount Scopus. Okay? Now that's to the east of the Temple Mount. Then, of course, there's the southern part, which faces, and you see that the land slopes all the way down over there, going towards the river, that in those days they called Hashiloach, but the Arabs gave it the name Silwan. Okay. And today there's an Arab village over there, but originally this was the original Ir David, the city of David. This is where the Jews lived in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So that's the southern direction. The west, this is where the Kotel still stands to this very day. Okay? And then there is the north, which today actually happens to be buried. There are Arab houses and things like that over there. And of course, Rabbi Gorin, and there are one or two Jewish things, such as Rabbi Gorin's yeshiva and so on, which stands on the north part of the the square of the Kotel, you know. All right. So, there were gates, of course, in all parts. There is a Mishnah, a Masechta, a Mishnah called Midos, which means literally measurements. And there they have a description of what the second Beis HaMikdash looked like, where the gates were positioned, where the rooms, the various rooms were stationed, because they needed rooms for different things. As for example, let's say a storage area for wood, place where they kept the cattle when they needed, you know, in order to for the sacrifices, rooms for the Kahanim, a place where the Sanhedrin met and things like that and so on. And there's a description of that. And then of course there's a description of what the courtyards were like over there, and the Mizbeach for the sacrifices, and then of course the Heichal itself, the going into the you know, the main part of the sanctuary, the holier part of it, which had the it had the Mizbach HaTorus, the altar for incense burning, or it's also called Mizbach HaZahav, the golden one, and there's where the menorah stood. And also you had the Shulchan, which had the Lechem HaPonim on it. In other words, the table upon which they placed what they called the Shovret, right, which every Shabbos they would replace it and put fresh chalas over there, and then they would stay for a week. And of course, a miracle was that even at the end of the week, the chalas were still fresh and they never got stale, and then they were eaten by the kohanim.
That was unleavened bread, though.
Yeah. Unleavened? I guess it was unleavened. Yeah, I guess it was unleavened. For the sacrifices, you had to have unleavened bread. Yeah, I guess it was unleavened bread. I mean, I have to think for a moment. There are only certain types of breads. There are only two types of breads primarily that where they used chametz in. One was you had lachmei todah. In other words, breads, there were 40 breads that you had to bring when you gave a Thanksgiving offering. Of course, it didn't mean everyone had to be, a pound loaf or anything like that, but you had to bring 40 breads. So 10 of those breads were made with chametz, the rest were not, okay? And then on Shavuos, there was a special offering of called the Shtei HaLechem, in other words, the two loaves of bread that were brought on that day. And they also had to be baked with chametz. But all the other things, you're right. I mean, everything else was baked as
well. Chametz showbread with you.
Right. Right. Yeah, it was baked as that. Okay. So that, and then there was a parochus, the separation that divided that from the Kodesh HaKodoshim, right, from the Holy of Holies, in which, of course, there stood in the days of the first Beis HaMikdash, there stood the Aron HaKodesh over there, and that was it, you know. And of course the
is that the original Ten Commandments?
The Ten Commandments were in there, yes, right, Ten Commandments. And but you know, that disappeared already prior to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, because they knew already that the destruction was getting closer, and so that disappeared. Either the Kohanim hit it or something or other, but it disappeared so that it could not fall prey to the Babylonians, who eventually destroyed the first place they made. But at any rate, this is something like the geography of what the Beis HaMikdash was like. As I say, you'll find it in Maseches Midos, which is the last Masechta in Seder Kodshim. Now, if you came in by the gate that went in from the east, what he's saying over here is that you should not act disrespectfully. That's what he means by Le'yokel Rosho. You should not act disrespectfully when you come in through the east. And what would be disrespectful? The answer is, of course, that you would go in such a way that your toshi would be facing the Holy of Holies. Because that would be disrespectful, right? In other words, you could come in, but you couldn't go out that way. If you tried to go out, you would have to go out backwards. You could not go in, because it's a mark of respect, okay? But, as we'll see now from the Gemara, that it extended, you know, not just to the Har HaBayis that you had to behave that way, but even the immediate area over there, okay? So let's continue now. Omar Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, the name of Rav, and he said, Lo Yamoro, or Lo Amru, Eliminat Sofim Lifnim Veroa. It says, this prohibition that you're not, you know, to face, you know, that you're not to be in that eastern direction, you know, coming from the east and showing disrespect to the Holy of Holies applies only if, and this is Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav, he says, applies only if you are min hatzofim ulifnim, in other words, if you are on Mount Scopus and anywhere nearer between Mount Scopus and actually Yerushalayim itself, mm-hmm. then you can't act that way. In other words, the implication would be that on the other side of Mount Scopus,
You could act.
You could. That's according to him. Okay, so we'll see that there is a disagreeing statement too. Mount Scopus actually is high. On the other side of Mount Scopus, you see, it's a mountain. It's a little mountain. Okay, the other side actually faces going down towards the the Yam HaMelech, to the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
And that's, for example, where Ma'ale Adumim, where my son David lives, is located maybe about 5-6 miles to the east of Mount Scopus. But you cannot see most of the Temple Mount or anything from there, because the Mount Scopus interferes in the way over there. Mm-hmm. Of course, Mount Scopus is where they built the original Hebrew University and the original Hadassah Hospital. Then the Jordanians surrounded it during 1948. They didn't actually conquer it, but they surrounded it. And under the terms of the armistice, the Jews could only send in supplies over there, for the people who were stationed there, so that for practical purposes, the university and the Hadassah Hospital were out of bounds for the Jewish community, except, as I say, for the convoy, and even then, at times the Arabs would take pot shots at them. And this was why, after 1948, the Jews were compelled to build a new Hebrew university in Yerushalayim, and this is the what they call the campus on Givat Ram, right near Givat Mordechai, by the Gan, in that area over there. And the Hadassah, they built a brand new hospital even further out on the outskirts of Yerushalayim.
All that is very clearly described in that book, O Jerusalem.
Right.
Very vividly described.
Yeah, it still is a classic about the 1948 war.
Right.
Okay, so if you are from Mount Scopus heading towards Yerushalayim, that's where you have to show respect, right? Uva Roa, and also you have to be able to see the Temple Mount, okay? So there's where you have to show respect. But the implication would be then that, in accordance with Rabbi Huda Marav, that if you're beyond Scopus on the other side, and as a result you can't see Yerushalayim, then you don't have to worry about that. Itmar Nami. Now we have a similar teaching that we have learned, that Omar Rav Abba, the Rei de Rabbi Chia Barabba, that Rav Abba, the son of Rabbi Chia Barabba, said, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. He says, Rabbi Yochanan also said likewise, that Lo Amoro, that when did they say this? It's Eliminat Sofim Nufnim of Uveroa, right? And now they add something that was not in the other statement, Uv She'en Goder, or if there is no fence over there. If you could see it, but there's an intervening fence, then in that case, you're not bound by it, okay? Uvizman, now he adds one other thing, Uvizman Shashchino Shoah. And also, as long as the Shechina, the Divine Presence, is there upon the Temple Mount. Meaning, in other words, as long as the Beis HaMikdash is in existence, then the supplies. But what is the implication? Implication would be that if there is no Beis HaMikdash in existence, then this rule would not apply. All right, now that's his opinion, all right? So far we've heard the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, we've heard Rabbi Yochanan's, yes?
Yes. The word
Yakel? Yakel is from the word kal. It's the verb, which means to make light your head. In other words, to act disrespectfully. This is what it means.
Is that to lower your head?
No, that would be Yakin Rosh.
So what is...
Yakel means to act in a light... light-headed manner.
All right.
In other words, to act in a disrespectful manner. This is really what it means, showing disrespect. But that's what the phrase means. Okay? Tanu Rabba. Now we have another statement, which says, Haniftem Yehuda. Now we're going to have a whole business about when you have to make, which way should you face when you make. Obviously here the problem is, not to show disrespect towards the Beis HaMikdash.
You're talking about defecation?
Yeah. Okay. Right, I'm talking about defecation, exactly, okay. Yeah. Because the other is considered light in comparison, okay?
Okay.
So he says, HaNifneh BeYehuda, if a person is in Yehuda and he has to make, so Lo Yifneh or Lo Yiponeh Mizrach Marav. He shouldn't do it on an east-west direction, but rather north and south. The idea being that you shouldn't be doing it in direction of the Beis HaMikdash. I said before, to bear your rear end towards the Beis HaMikdash is considered acting extremely disrespectful. Okay?
tend to face it while you're doing it also is...
And even to face it too, it is also it's being disrespected.
You're looking at it. Yeah, you're looking,
So therefore he says, do it in the opposite direction, south of the door, north and south. What about Galil? And in Galil, which of course is to the north of Yerushalayim, then in that case, there it says, Lo yifona ela mizrach marav. When you do it, you should do it facing east or west. But obviously, not to do it which way? North or south, because in that case, you would be showing disrespect. The Rabbi Yossi Matya, but it says, but Rabbi Yossi permitted it. Why? Shehoya Rabbi Yossi Yemer, because Rabbi Yossi said, Lay osru ela beroeh. The prohibition was in existence only if you could see Yerushalayim or the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mekom Shein Shom Godel, and in a place where there was no fence over there, or with Mansha Shekhinah Shoro, right? And at the time when the Shekhinah, when the Divine Presence was present over there. But the sages prohibit your doing it. Okay? In other words, Rabbi Yosef was willing to forget about the whole deal, but the sages did not. So they say Chachamim Hayin Tanaka. So Chachamim here, aren't they the same as the first authority was mentioned? You know that you shouldn't do it. You know when you're facing the base Hamikdash. So he says he could be Nahu Tzedati. The difference between them is you're facing directly, but whether you're off sides. In other words, if you face, let's say, if you're in Yerushalayim and Yerushalayim, you're facing either directly to the east or to the west, right? So that would be disrespectful, according to his opinion, right? So,
you have to face
right.
North or south.
So north or south would be all right in that particular case, according to him. Okay? no, we're trying to talk, first of all, about the fact that the Chachamim prohibited, and yet they don't differ in their opinion, right? So they say, you could be down in Sedodim. The question is only if you're to the side, either more to the right or more to the left or something like that, more to the north,
more
to the south, whatever you are.
Yeah.
We're not facing directly. So in that case, the Chachomim, who made no exception, so they would prohibit it. Whereas Rabbi Yossi, who has all these provisos, then, you know, it would be permissible. Okay. Tanya Yidok, on the other hand, we have another teaching which says, Hanifna b'Yehuda, if somebody has to do his job in Yehuda, Leifana Mizrach Marav, he shouldn't do it either east or west, Eletzof Mendorim, right? But rather to north and south. Of Agolil, and in Galilee, Tzof Mendorim, Osir, but Mizrach Marav Muta, right? Here they say specifically that it's the north and the south in Galilee which is prohibited, but the east and the west is permitted. For Rabbi Yossi Matir and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi permits it. Shoy Rabbi Yossi Emer Leosru El Baroa, because Rabbi Yossi says the prohibition is only when you can see it. But if you can't see, you know, the Har Habayis or Yerushalayim or something that, then it doesn't apply. Now Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says Bisman Shebeis Hamikdash Kayom Osur. Says at the time when the Beis HaMikdash is in existence, it's prohibited. This man she'ein Beis HaMikdash kayom mutar. But when the Beis HaMikdash is not in existence, then it is permissible. Then you don't have to worry about all these things. So far we've had those who say no, and those who say that it's not important today because, you know, there could be other things. They can't see Yerushalayim, there's a fence, and the Beis HaMikdash is no longer in existence right now. Rabbi Akiva Osir Bechol Mokim, but along comes Rabbi Akiva and he prohibits it everywhere. Don't face in any direction which will be disrespectful to Eretz Yisrael or disrespectful to Yerushalayim or whatever it may be. So this is what they ask now. Rabbi Akiva, Haina Tana Kama, what's the difference between Rabbi Akiva and the earlier authority who says that you can? So he says, Yikub Benayu Kutzla Oretz. The difference between them is that the first one said that it is prohibited where? Only in Eretz Israel itself. Outside of Eretz Israel it would be permitted. Whereas along comes Rabbi Akiva and he says that Chutz La'aretz is also Osir. Rabba Havashadyan Lei Livnei Mizrach Marav. So now they tell the story about Rabba. And, you know, Rabba was one of the Babylonian authorities. Naturally, if he's a Babylonian authority, where is he living?
Not in Babylon.
Right, very good. Right, he's buried in Grants too, right?
Yeah, with the War of 1812.
What was the call of Washington's white horse?
Yeah.
So, at any rate, he had tiles that were lying down. Shadyan Livne over here is like tiles, okay, or bricks and tiles, okay? It's like the Hebrew word levadim, all right? And how were they facing? They were facing Mizrach and Marav. They were facing east and west. Okay. Ozal Abaye, so along came Abaye, his pal, Shadanhu Tzofim Adorim. And what did he do? He turned around the tiles that it should be north and south. All Rabbah, so Rabbah came along, Tartzinhu, and what did he do? He pushed them around again to make them face, you know, from east to west. Now remember, from the point of view of Babylonia, where is Eretz Yisrael? The answer is it's south.
South of Babylon.
I mean, we would think that would be east, but it isn't. It's really more west. To the north. Right, so Eretz Yisrael is therefore more to the south. Yeah, at other times, I mean, they talked about Mizrach Marav, you know, because Eretz Yisrael is considered. All right, so as you can see, right. No, they considered that they were to the east.
It's west.
Right, they were east and Eretz Yisrael was west. Okay,
west.
Correct, all right.
No,
rather than north and south, all right.
Right.
Okay, right. So that Rabbah, he had his tiles were facing that way, so along came Abaye, and they turned the tiles around to have them face north and south. So along came Rabbah again, and he straightened it out the way he wanted. Omar, man hide them come so early. And he said, hey, who is bugging me? Literally bothering me or making me feel distressed, right? Anu Rabbi Akiva really. I hold the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, the Omar B'chol Mokom Osur, who says that everywhere, meaning even in the Chutz La'aretz, you still must not show any disrespect towards Eretz Yisrael or towards Yerushalayim or the place where the Temple Mount stood. Okay. Now, of course, I just want to take one little aside. While most of the laws that are mentioned over here and that we'll see in the remainder of this perek concerning respect for the Har HaBayis and the Beis HaMikdash, you know, are not particularly in effect because, unfortunately, Baba Tzenu HaRabim, but nevertheless, there are certain things that we have to do to show respect for the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, for the place where the temple itself stood. We know that, first of all, as we had much earlier in the Gemara, that when we pray towards the
east.
Yeah, well, we pray in the direction of where the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim stood. That's where we pray, because you say east, that's if we're to the west.
Right.
If we would be east of Yerushalayim, then we have to face west. Like in Baalei Adumim, you have to face to the west. That's the way the shul is positioned. The Yoron is there, because it's facing towards Yerushalayim. If you're in the Galil, you have to face down south. If you would be in the southern part of Yehuda, you know, like, for example, let's say Be'er Sheva, something like that, then you would have to face north. Okay? And of course, we in Chutz La'aretz, we still face in the proper direction depending upon, you know, where we are located geographically in connection with Eretz Yisrael.
I want to ask
yes.
That we learned in Perek.
Yeah, well, I forget already whether it's the fourth or the fifth parak,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. So that we learned.
Right, right. Yeah. And of course, it's based, you know, upon the prayer of Shlomo HaMelech that he prayed, you know, that the hearts of all the people, you know, would be turned towards this base Kodesh HaKadoshim, and from there, you know, the prayer should ascend to heaven. Because the base Kodesh HaKadoshim, the prayers were not only for on behalf of the people of Israel, but they were meant also to represent the prayers of all mankind. Even as Yeshayahu came along later and he said, you know, Ki Beis Yibeis Tefil Yekori L'Kol Ho'amim, my house, literally, will be called the house of prayer for all peoples. So.
But aren't some of these rules also applying to the synagogue?
Yes. Yes. For example, spitting in the synagogue should not be done, except if you're in a shtibble.
Then he has Spittoon.
But the Lubavitches, where they do the that part of the Alena, where it's the Rick or something.
Correct, right. Shevishtachem Lahil Barik, which means literally they bow, the Goyim bow to vanity and nothingness. Okay? But the word Rick reminds you of the word rok, which means spit, and so therefore to show their contempt, and also it, so that they do that. That's correct. Okay. This is why in Yiddish there used to be an expression that the person came into shul when he came in late, very late. It's a hangekommen zum Eishbein.
Eishbein, right.
He came in to shul at the time when you spit.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah. That phrase.
Okay, Samach Beis.
Okay.
Samach Beis. Tanya Rabbi Akiva. We have learned that Rabbi Akiva said as follows. So now, by the way, the next page or so is going to be devoted to the problem of moving your bells. Okay. All right.
Let's hope it's not a problem.
We had before also, first of all, remember, we learned that you have a bracha for it.
Right? Sure.
Because after all, if your body functions normally, then we have to be grateful to God for it, you see. And then we also learned similar laws, in connection with modesty when you have to daven and you're near a privy or something like that, what do you do? And we also had laws concerning, if you're wearing tefillin, what do you have to do when you go into the toilet and so on? You have to take them off and so on. So we see that this, daily life is daily life. And they were aware of bodily functions back in those days, and they were concerned that there should be a spirit of kedusha. In spite of the fact that we consider it, as being, let's say, one of the filthiest things, but nevertheless, you have to see, even in filth, you have to see a spark of kedusha as well. So Rabbi Akiva said, once upon a time, I followed after Rabbi Yehoshua the Beis HaKiseh. I followed him into the Beis HaKiseh.
Into the toilet.
Yeah. But Amarati Mimenu Gimu Devorim. I learned three things from him. In other words, I watched what he was doing from him. I learned three things. Lamarati Sheinifim Mizrachimar. First of all, I learned that you should not face east or west, when you have to make. Instead, where you have to face, north and south. Right? Okay. Elitzav Medor. And I learned she'enifroyin umod elamiyushav. I also learned that when you make, you have to make not standing, but seated. Apparently, some people try standing. I can understand it very well.
Yeah.
You think it's funny?
No, because you'd be crouching over a hole.
Yes, believe me.
Yeah.
I saw toilets like that in France. I was shocked. In Paris, to say nothing of other places. Where it was only a hole in the ground, that's all it was. A hole in the ground.
I went to I was in the desert, that's all they had, but you have to stand up.
Right. So that's why. But he says, that you shouldn't stand, you should sit. After all. For one thing, you have to realize, too. We had the Gemara a long time ago about the fact that when you make, you should make it with ease. Because the other way, if you do it with difficulty, it could bring on hemorrhoids. Remember?
Long time ago we had.
So, this is another reason, you see. As I say, they're concerned to bring a little kedusha into it, but also they're also concerned about what would be a health practice as well. And I also learned she'mekanchim biyomin el bismel, that when you wipe yourself, you have to wipe yourself not with your right hand, but you have to wipe yourself with the left hand. Now, why this is, we'll find out in a few lines, okay? But in the meantime, when Rabbi Akiva told this story, so Amalei ben Azai, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, said to him, Atkan heyasta ponim ponecha barabecha, this is the kind of chutzpah that you had, towards your own teacher, that you go with him into the, follow him in the toilet to see. So Amalei, so Akiva answered him, Torah he, v'lilmod anitzorach. He says, it's Torah and I have to learn how to act properly. This is also part of Torah, to know how to act rightly. Tanya, and lo and behold, now we have a teaching, Ben Azai Omer. This time it's Ben Azai who's giving true confessions. And he says, Pamachas nechdasti acha Rabbi Akiva. Says, I once followed Rabbi Akiva. Remember I said a moment ago right. that Rabbi Akiva was Ben Azai's teacher.
Rabbi Akiva followed,
so, followed Rabbi Akiva the way Sakisei into the bathroom. It's also a euphemism, Beis HaKisei.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
the
an
house of
outhouse. It was an outhouse. Yeah, so it was, okay. Memenu Gimel Devorim, and I learned from him three things. Lamadati Sheinit in Mizrach Maariv, so, you know, he says, I learned from him that you're not to face east or west, Elatzaf Mendorim, but rather north and south. Lamadati Sheinit Froim Umad, Elam Yushav, and again, I learned from him that, you know, when you make, you have to make not to make standing, but you have to make sitting. And I learned from him too that you cannot wipe yourself with your right hand, but you have to wipe yourself with your left hand. So Amalei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda said to him, "At kan heyasta panecha barabecha. This is the kind of chutzpah that you show towards your rabbi, your teacher." Amalei. So he said to him, "Torah hi v'lu moedani tzorah. This is Torah, and I have to learn." Now we have a different story.
He used the same story, excuse.
Yeah. Same thing. All right. Now this time we're telling a story about Rav Kana, not the Rabbi Kana that we know, but Rav Kana.
Rav Kana
al Gana Tusei Puriye the Rav the Rav. So Rav Kana once came and he laid down. You know, remember Rav, the great right. Rabbi Rav and Shmuel Rav. Yeah. So Rav Kana decided to do the same thing. Obviously, Rav Kana was a student of Rav. Shomei, so he heard the soch that he was talking, the sichek and joking, the yosah tzurachov, and then you know he did his business. Meaning, you know, he had relations with his wife. In other words, first. He spoke to her, and it was very nice. And then, you know, he told the jokes and so on. It's sort of a foreplay, so to speak, right. Okay? But, you know, he wanted to get her in the right mood, you know, before he had intercourse with her. Omalei, so he said to him, Dome pume da abol ki de lo shor of tavshilu. He said, hey, you know what? It sounds to me that Abba, by the way, Rav, as I mentioned before, his real name was Abba Arika. Abba, okay? Seems to me that Abba's mouth was licking away over there as if he had never licked at a dish. In other words, he was enjoying himself so much doing this, it would seem that this is the first time, you know, that he was doing it. That's how much pleasure he was getting out of it.
From the from his
from having intercourse with his wife, right. Having relations with her, okay, and he was enjoying
and
it.
And the other his student is under his bed.
Yeah. And obviously, this was a voice from down underneath the bed.
Yeah. Right.
Commenting upon what was going up above on the other part.
On the other part. Right.
So, so he said to him, that as Rob said, you know, he said to him, Kana, Hacha, At, are you here? He says, Book, get out of here. The love Arachara, he says, this is not Derech Eretz, you know, for you to be there. So I'm alone. So he said to him, Torah he. This is Torah. Dil mo da need, sorry.
I'm going to learn how to
learn. I have to learn.
Have to learn?
Right.
What better way to learn it from your teacher?
Right, right. Practical instruction. So
this
now,
no,
I wouldn't recommend that. Not as a general rule, but you know,
you don't have any space under your bed anyway, right?
The interesting thing is that they were so imbued with the thirst for Torah, and the fact that also Torah means not just you know, theoretical knowledge, but actual practical knowledge to know how they themselves should be able, how they should act, whether they're in the bathroom. Or whether they're having relations with their wives or whatever it may be, they want to know what is the proper way to do it, what is the holy way, so to speak, to do it, and so on. That this too is considered an integral part of Torah learning. So, all right, now the Gemara wants to ask the question. Remember, we learned twice already that when you wipe yourself, you have to wipe yourself with your left hand and not with the right hand. All right, so now the Gemara wants to ask, you know, why is it? By the way, it would be wonderful if we had punctuation in this text. Yeah. Punctuation didn't exist. Okay, so you have to sort of get the spirit out to know where is there a comma, where is there a period, where is there a question mark, and things like that. Okay. So, for what reason do you wipe yourself with the left hand, not with the right hand? So, Omar Robo, gave the following reason. He said, "Bimnei Shatora Nitno Biyom," says, the Torah was given by the right hand of God. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, this is on the Zosa Prophet, says, Mimino, from his right hand, Eishdos Lomo. A fiery Torah was given unto them, to the people of Israel. So since the right hand represents the giving of the Torah, therefore it would be disrespectful to use the right hand for this particular purpose. Rabbi Barbat Chono, he had a different explanation. He has a different explanation. He says that the right hand is closer to the mouth. Now what do you mean closer to the mouth? What that he means is that when you eat, you have a tendency to eat with your right hand. So if you're going to use that hand, you know, in order to wipe yourself, and then you go to eat, hygienically it's not right.
You're going to wash before you eat?
Hopefully you wash. But maybe it's the kind of food that doesn't require washing.
That's true too. That's
at
true.
Any rate, as we see, I mean, so he gives a practical reason then. You're liable to wind up with all kinds of germs on your right hand, so therefore don't, because you're going to eat with that right hand. So one is because of respect for Torah, and the other one is because it's a practical reason. Rab Shimon ben Lokish, Omar, he says, it's b'nei shekosher bo tefillin. Says the reason being is that you used your right hand in order to tie the tefillin on the left hand. Okay? So that since the tefillin are going literally on the weaker hand, this is what the Gemara would say, it's the Yad Kehed, the weaker hand, so that therefore you're tying the tefillin with the right hand, and therefore, you know, it's not proper. Rab Nachman by Yitzchak Amar Mipnei Shemare Bo Tamei Torah, says the reason being that with your right hand you point out the different notes of the Torah. In other words, whether it's the Pashto, this is the way Rashi takes it anyway, the Pashto, the Zarko, and things like that, you use it in order to point with, okay? So because you're using it to point with, so therefore, this is the reason why you should not use it, you know, for the other purpose, okay? Rabbi Akiva, Omer Rab Tantum Baruch Hanilai, Rab Tantum Baruch Hanilai said, Cholatzenuva Beis HaKisei, he says, whoever behaves modestly in the Beis HaKisei, is Nitzol Mishloshe Devorim, he will be saved from three things. And what are the three things he'll be saved from? Min HaNechoshim, from snakes, from minhu akrabim, and from scorpions, from minhu amazikin, and from the shadim, exactly, you know, the evil
ghosts,
spirits that
yeah.
go hanging around the bathrooms. Okay, the yeshomrim, and those who say also afkalam asomi shobimolo, also his dreams will be okay with him. In other words, when he dreams, he'll have peaceful dreams. Of course, in those days, we don't have to stress the fact that it was quite possible that in a Beis HaKisei, that once in a while a snake or a scorpion or something would happen over there. I mean, an outhouse is an outhouse. It's not our own homes, you know, the way they're built today. Although, don't you occasionally hear something about an alligator swimming up?
Yeah.
Excuse me, I think I didn't hear a line. I don't think I was paying attention.
Well,
can you go back to where is Rabbi Yehoshua Omer?
Rabbi Yehoshua Omer Bnei Shekosei. Right. You're absolutely right. I skipped that little phrase. Okay, I know why I skipped. It's because there's a repetition over there. That's why.
Okay.
Right. I got us Bnei Shemare Bo Tamei Torah, right? Because with the right hand you point to the different notes and the Torah or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. or you bring out different reasons in the Torah, you know, like people use their hands in order to point and to speak. Ketanoi, that's what I had left out, that phrase over there. Ketanoi, even as we find among the Tanoim, in other words, the teachers of the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Vipneisha Oichilbo, right? In other words, this discussion already took place in an earlier period among the Tanoim, not just in the days of the teachers of the Talmud or the Gemara, right? Vipneisha Oichilbo, because he eats with it, that of course would be like the other opinion that said Vipneisha Krovalapeh, remember? Mm-hmm. That it's near his mouth. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Vipneisha Koisigbo, Rabbi Yeshua says it's because you write with your right hand, of course. What should it be writing? It should be writing Divrei Torah, right? Rabbi Akiva Omer Vneisha Marim Bo Tamei Torah. So you see, that's why I skipped, because I saw Tamei Torah. And then comes the statement of Rav Tantum Baruch Hanilai, that whoever is modest in the Beis HaKisei will be saved, will be spared these three things, namely snakes, scorpions, and evil spirits. And there are those who say also they'll have peaceful dreams.
Thank you.
Ahu Beis HaKisei. Now there was a certain outhouse, the Harabit Tveria, located in Tveria. Ki Hava Ayale Bei Trei, Afila Bi Yemomo, Mizzake. This outhouse, if two people would come in together, even in the daytime when the Mazikim are not supposed to be active, but this particular one, the Mazikim, were working full blast. And by the way, usually they say, you know, that in company you can avoid the mazikim, but apparently here the company wasn't good enough. If the two of them came in together at the same time, the mazikim was still active. So Rabbi Yami, Rabbi Asi, Hava Ayale Bei Chad Vechad Lukudei Velizvazake. So Rabbi Yami and Rabbi Asi had to use this, but when they came into it, each one came in at a different time, so that way neither of them came to any harm. Amri Lahu Rabbonim. Now, when they came out, so the other rabbi said to them, Lo, Mr. Peter, weren't you afraid to go in over there since you know that, you know, the Mazikim around? So Amri Lahu, so they said to them, Anon Kabola Gemironim. Says, we have a tradition, we learned the tradition. And what is it? Kabola Deves Hakisei Tzniyuso Ushisi Suko. In other words, there is a tradition that if you're in the Beis HaKisei, modesty and silence will protect you. Kabbalah de Yisurei, and we have a tradition that if you're suffering bodily pains, you should suffer also in silence, and that will help, you know, to overcome the pain. It doesn't mean you won't feel the pain, but at least, you know, a little bit of the suffering will be relieved if you do it in silence and resignation, and you pray at the same time, right?
Didn't we learn that the women went to the bathroom, one would keep talking? They would keep talking? Or am I confusing something else? When the women went to the bathroom,
well,
they would go together and they would talk to reassure each other? Or am I
you know, we may have, it's possible.
Maybe
it's possible. It's possible, you know. Sometimes we forget something that we learned.
Sometimes okay. I remember things that I didn't learn.
Now, Abaye Mabile Ime Imron Lamoya Bahadilis Hakise. This is an interesting little story. It says Abaye, his Ime, his mother, or some say that it was like the nurse, trained for him Imra, a sheep. Lemeo Bahade Leves Hakise. Not a sheep, but I guess like a lamb or something like that. That it should accompany him whenever he went to the Beis HaKisei. I don't know if this is Mary's little lamb or not, but this is Abaye's little lamb. Okay. That the lamb should accompany him to the Beis HaKisei. Why? Because, you know, that way the lamb will give him a little extra company for protection or something against the Mazikin. This is a charm, in other words, that she decided to use against the Mazikin. So now the Gemara says, Rabile Gadyo, why didn't she train, let's say, a goat?
Why a sheep?
Why a sheep rather than a goat? So they say the reason is because Sa'ir b'Sa'ir v'Chalif. The word Sa'ir in Hebrew has two meanings. The word Sa'ir means a goat, but Sa'ir is also a kind of these satyrs or something like that, you know. Like in the Greek mythology, you know, where they have hooves like goats and so on, half man, half goat or something. So that the word Sa'ir could be misinterpreted. So for that being the case, or maybe again, maybe it would be like Al Tiptach Pe LaSotan, as we had before, right? Don't open your mouth for the sun. You never know what will happen if you do. So that's why it was not a goat. Rova mekami da habereisha mekalkesha le bas rav chizda amaguza belakno. All right. Now they tell a story about Rava. Before he became the Reisha, meaning the Rosh Yeshiva, before he became the head of the academy, so the daughter of Rav Chisda, who happens, of course, to be Mrs. Rava, okay, she would take an amguza, a knot, and she would be karkasho, she would, you know, rattle with it a knot in a bowl, okay, in order to make a noise, and this would do what?
Chase the
Shalem, exactly, okay? Bosa the Mola, after he became Belach, so to speak, in other words, after he reigned as Rosh Yeshiva. So, Abdele Kabosa, so she continued to do this practice, you know, trying to protect him, but what did she do? The Kabosa over here is a different meaning. The word Kabosa is like, we find in the book of Daniel that the word chavin means windows. So what did she do? So after he became Rosh Hashiva, then she made for him a window, a manchale yoda reshe, and then she would keep her hand on his head when he was doing it. I guess that was also
she reached
a good
inside.
Right.
She reached inside from a window.
Right, exactly.
To reassure him.
Right. Okay, that's fine. Omar Ulo. Ula said, "Acharei hagoder nifne miyad." That if you are behind the fence, then you can immediately do your business over there. Uva vika, and if you're on an open plain, which is what the meaning of the word vika is over here, then kolz man shemisatesh in chavoro shomea, you can do the business if you misatesh. Misatesh means literally you sneeze, but here it doesn't mean sneezing from the nose. It means sneezing from the other direction, okay?
I mean breaking wind.
Right, to break wind or something like that. There's nobody around to listen to you, then you can do it.
They can break
but
wind.
Otherwise, have respect for another person and don't do it in the presence of somebody nearby, okay?
So you learn from that we shouldn't break wind in a public toilet?
No. If there's a wall there, it's okay.
Right.
If
there's a wall, it's okay.
Right, we're talking about the open plain.
Open plain, I see, okay. Right. Okay, good. Thank you.
Isi Bar Nosson, he learned the tradition the following way. He says, Acharei Goder, behind the fence, Kolz Man Shemisate Shein Chaviri Shemea. You can do it as long as he can, break wind and the other guy can't hear. But on an open plain, Kolz Man Shein Chaviri Roehu. You can't do it if somebody else sees what you're doing. So the first tradition was that in the open plain you can't do it if the other guy can hear you. Here it is, don't do it if the other guy can see you. Alright. Meisler, so now they ask Akasha about this teaching because there is a statement that says Yotzi mipesach beis habad v'niftin l'acharei hagodeh v'hein tahorin. Okay. Which means, now we're talking over here, the beis habad was the place where they would press olives. Okay? So they had apparently a house in which they would have an olive press. And you know, they put the olives over there and then put a heavy stone on it and maybe go round and round or something like that, you know, until it ground the oil out of the olives. Okay? And they would gather the oil that way. Now, remember also that for centuries, even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, people in Eretz Yisrael particularly still kept up the business about Taharos for tumas. that they would try to eat their food. I mean, this is if they were, as we would say, Purushim. They were Pharisees. In other words, they were members, you know, they followed the teachings of the Chachamim, the sages. So they would try to eat their food in Tara. And certainly during the time that they based on Mikdash, they were very careful about that, that they would eat their food so that they were in a state of Tara. Not only that people were in a state of Tara, but also that the food that they ate was also in a state of Tara. All right. Now, the problem over here would be that if the people would go to the bathroom, they wouldn't be visible, and maybe the possibility would be that they would become unclean. Now, by unclean, I don't mean that, you know, that they would have to wipe themselves and wash their hands or something like that. But when we're talking about uncleanness, we mean those things that bring about tumor. As, for example, contact with the dead, or contact with a rodent, or something, a dead sheretz, and things like that, the lizards, and some stuff like that. The different things, you know, that bring about tumor. Okay? So the fear might be then that if the people who are working in the Beis Chabad go out to make, maybe they come in contact with it, right? And yet it says if they have to go, what do? They go behind the fence over there. Mm. And what? And we're not worried that the olives in the meantime will become unclean because of these people. Okay? Yotzim and Pesel Beis Chabad, you have a Niftin Afi Agon. Okay. The Hain Tahorin. All right. So the answer that they give is, why was this permitted? They says, Betara Sekelo. When they came to being able to eat food in Tara, it would be an impossibility if they didn't use some leniency. So this was the leniency in that particular case. Toshba, come and listen. Kami Yerchaku Yutahorin. How far can they be distant and still remain clean? Kadeshe Hegro Ehu. So the answer is a distance only as far as the people in the Beis Chabad can see him. So they say, Shani Yochle Taras, the Kilberabon. So again, they say that the people who ate Taras, the Chachomim gave them a little break as far as, you know, the laws are concerned, simply because you know, they wanted to encourage them to do so.
I don't understand this whole scene here.
Yeah.
The
scene is a person is working the Beis Chabad. It's
right.
Working over there. Okay.
Yeah. In the olive press.
He has to go. In the olive press. All right. He has to go and do.
Right.
He's doing. Okay. Uh-huh. Now, as I said, the fear might be, you know, that if he goes and you can't see him anymore, that maybe he'll come in contact with some tumor, and that in turn, when he comes back into the Beis Chabad, he will in turn contaminate the olives and the oil and so on. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that therefore, one opinion says that he can go right behind the fence over there and then come back, and we're not worried about it. The next one says, wait, how far can he go behind the fence? So the answer is that even though he's behind the fence, but you still have to be at a distance where you can see him to make sure, you know, that he's not doing anything wrong.
You can't allow him his own discretion. That if he works in the olive press and he usually follows rules, you can't allow his own discretion about coming in contact with something.
But people are afraid. They want to make sure that, you know, they could be 100% certain that there was no impurity.
So
but this was a concession, you know, in order that they permitted him to go, because they didn't declare the food unclean, because it would create too great a hardship. It would mean that whenever a person had to go, so automatically the food would become unclean. And how can you do that? People have to go. They have to eat.
He could go defecate and he could go behind a fence.
Right.
That was okay.
Correct. Right.
Otherwise, they would have had to watch him.
Right. Okay.
Strict. Strict.
Absolutely. All right. Rabashi Omar, he says, "By Kotzman Shel Chaver Roeh, what is this business, you know, that as long as the other person can't see him?" Deko Omar Isi Bar Nosen, even as Isi Bar Nosen said, so Kotzman Shel Chaver Roeh is Peruo, right? As long as the other guy can't see him when he is uncovering himself. But he can see his own uncleanliness, his own you know, his own
private parts.
Yeah, his own private parts that he's permitted to look at, but it's not proper, you know, to do it. you know, that the other person would see. In other words, you have to preserve sinias when you go to the Beis HaRakisa. Okay. All right. Now they tell an interesting little story. They say, "Who saw the no? The no is coming to Rav Nachman." There was a certain guy who would make hespedim. You know what I mean by hespedim?
Funeral
orations, right? Funeral eulogies, and he happened to do so in the presence of Rav Nachman. Omar, and this is what he said. He said, "Hi, tzanur berachos avachav." He says, "This man, in other words, the dead person, was modest in all his ways," meaning including in his own private practices, he was very modest. Okay, so Amalei Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said to him, "Hey, atayelta hadei leBeis HaKisei? Did you ever go in together with him to the Beis HaKisei? Yodati tzanur ilo." So that you would know whether he really was modest in his behavior or not. The Tanya, as we have learned, in Korin Sanua Elo Mi Shetsnu Beis HaKise, that you cannot use the word Sanua, meaning a modest person, except for a person who actually is modest even in the Beis HaKise. Rav Nachman, Mein Apgalei Mine. Now, Rav Nachman, what difference did it make to him? I mean, why did he have to make this statement? I mean, how do you know that he was so
questioning it?
This is over ashes, right? This argument's going on.
Exactly. So it says, "Mishum de Tanya," it's because we have a tradition which says, "Kishem shen Ephraim en Amesim, kach Ephraim en Asabdonim, v'min o'inen achrehen." So just as we know that punishment will be exacted from the dead, in other words, that they're going to have to face judgment, you know. So likewise, those people who eulogize them will also have to face judgment one day. And likewise, for those who are onen acharehen, which would mean, you know, those who say, "Oh, gee, what a terrific eulogy," and what, so on and so forth. So, of course, the idea being, naturally, that you have to be very circumspect in what you say, and don't go about, you know, with too great exaggeration. Maybe a little guzma is permitted, but certainly, I mean, not to go overboard, you know, make statements that have no validity, whatever. Well, I think we're going to have to call a halt. My voice is not going to carry too much further tonight.
All right.
But so we'll meet Sunday morning in Yad Vashem. We'll continue from over here.
About 9:15 or
something. Yeah.
9:15.
Yeah, about 9:15.
Breakfast.
We'll sit down.
Right,
I mean, we'll daven at 8.
Yeah.
We'll have our breakfast approximately a quarter to 9 to quarter past 9 or so, and then we'll come back over here and we'll learn.
Okay.
And we'll learn until about 10:30 or something.
So we're now on Samach
Beis. Yeah, now on Samach
Beis. Amud Aleph.
At the bottom of Amud Aleph.
Bottom.
Yeah. What do you
want to leave
for December 15th?
Okay. All right. So we start then from where it says over here, Tanu Rabbanon. That's what that follows immediately. It says, our sages taught us that Ezehu Tzanua, who is a person who is modest, Zeha Niftem Balaylo, this is a person who relieves himself at night, B'mokem Sheniftem Bayom, in the place where he relieves himself during the day. All right. Now, let's take a look at the Rashi at this particular point, because we'll understand, you know, what does Rashi say over there? Okay, so he says,
it's above the marginal gloss on the right. The two marginal glosses.
Yes, I have a different business over here.
Okay.
Ah, here. The Mokem Shenifta Bayom. You see that over there? So he says, Misrachek Meknei Odom, in other words, he goes at a distance from where people are in order to relieve himself by Lila at night, even as he does during the day. Now, the point is this. During the day, obviously, there are people around, you know, who might be seeing, so therefore he has to find himself a place where he could do his business in privacy. At night, you would think that since, you know, people cannot see what's going on, so that he doesn't have to take this trouble. But, according to this particular statement, he should observe the same type of modesty at night as he observes during the day. and go to a place where there's no possibility where he's going to be seen by people. So this is how Rashi understands it. Of course, now we can understand what is Rashi saying. But now we'll see that they challenge that particular statement. Okay? Eini? Isn't this so? The Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rab, didn't Rabbi Yehuda say in the name of Rab, Li'olam Yanhig Odom Esatz Meshachas Yavis, G'day Sholehet Tzorek Lisachek. He says, a person should relieve himself both in the morning and in the evening in such a way that he doesn't have to go far. In other words, the idea being, you know, that you should be able to find a place where you don't have to go to any distance in order to remove yourself, but, you know, but do it when? Shachris V'Yarvis. Now, what is Shachris V'Yarvis? So, as we'll see, Vesu, and likewise Rova, not just, you know, Rav, but Rova too. It says, B'Yamoma Hava Azil Admil V'Laila. Alright, we have the story about Rova, who, during the day, he would walk even as far as a mile in order, you know, to find a place of privacy where he could do it. Uvalailo, but at night, Omale Lishamei, he would say to his shamas, who was, you know, the servant who took care of his needs, he says, Penili duchto birchova demos, he says, find me, literally clear out for me a place which we could find even in the in the main street of the town. In other words, at night you don't have to go far, just find me a place where I can have a little bit of privacy in order to relieve myself. Okay? And likewise, Rabbi Zeir also said to his shamans, he said, Chazi man de ika achare beis chavraya. He says, see, who is there behind the beis chavraya? Chavraya over here, and this is like the, you know, the place where Talmidei Chachomim study. In other words, find me a place right behind the house of study, where, you know, I can relieve myself. So, okay. So far, what have we seen? We've seen that modesty is to be stressed. Secondly, why did the statement that you should relieve yourself morning and evening? So the answer is that you should do it Shachris, as Rashi says, Kodem Hayom, in other words, even before daylight, so that you have all the privacy and then you don't have to go far in order to do it, right? The Yarvis, and when it gets dark and people can't see anything, so you should also relieve yourself at that particular time in order that you don't, you know, so that people, Kadesh Elo Yehet Zorch Lisrachik, so that you don't have to go far away. So as Rashi says, Almo, we see, Amos Rachim Malayl, at night you don't have to go at any distance as long as you have your privacy over there. And then he said, if you remember, even in the square of town at night, he said, right, find me a place, Benili Duch, he says, Bibnayodam, a place, you know, which where there are no people around. And so therefore we see that the stress is really upon the idea that try to do your business as privately as you possibly can, so that this is one of the attributes of being tzonua, that shows, you know, modesty, which is considered one of the great virtues. Okay, so now they get back and they say, remember the statement said that you should go at night in the same place that you went during the day. But that doesn't make sense because all the other things have said you don't have to go far out at night, you know, the way you do during the day if you need the privacy. So therefore they say, Lo Tamor, the Gemara, Lo Tamor Bimokim, don't read it or don't say that it means in the place, El or Amor, but rather say, Kederech Shenifte Bayom. In other words, that just as during the day you have to do it with modesty, so at night you also have to do it with modesty. So that's the conclusion over there. Rav Ashi Yomar, Afilu Tema Ben Moke. Rav Ashi says, even if you read it, you keep the original reading of in the same place, right? Lo Nitzrecha, we need it only Ela Lekeren Zobis, only for a place which is like in the corners, literally. In other words, in such a place, you know, the people can be coming from different directions, so that therefore you have to be more circumspect as to what you do. Gufo, getting back again to sum up, Omer Rav Yehuda Marav, the Yom Yanhig Odom Esatz Boshach Zayavis, Kedei shelo yehei tzorech leisrachek. Getting back to the same statement that we read a few minutes ago, which said that a person should train himself in the morning and in the evening so that he should not have to go at any great distance. So Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a similar supporting statement. Ben Azai Omer, he says, Hashkeim Vitzei, Hare Vitzei, says get up early in the morning and go out and do your business, and at evening also, right after sunset has happened and it gets dark, go out and do your business. Kedei Shelo Tisrachek Mishemesh, and in order that you should not have to period over there, it should be, alright, in order that you should not have to go to any great distance. Now we add something else about modesty. I said Mishemesh, it's not Mishemesh, it's Mashmesh, which is quite a different thing, okay? Mashmesh means feel yourself, the shave, feel yourself and sit down. The Yalto shave usmashesh, but don't sit down and then feel yourself. Now the question is, what is this feeling yourself over here?
Yeah.
Okay, so the answer is, take a look at Rashi. Mashmesh, you see down on the bottom over there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It says Mashmesh, he says, feel yourself bits roar, either with a straw, or bekesam, or with a chip of wood, a splinter of wood, liftoach nikovim. In other words, he says, you should stimulate yourself in order to get the bowels in motion, literally to open up the
anus,
right? Anus, right?
Get
our minimum,
right?
Okay. stimulate yourself. I find sometimes that certain literature says that that's the same thing.
They were very explicit.
Right. Even as we say over there, that this is a good practice. And then it says Loshen Acher. There's another interpretation. He says Mashmesh Hamoshav. He says don't just feel yourself, but he says also feel the place that you're sitting on. Shelo Yehei Meluchloch, that it shouldn't be dirty. In other words, make sure that you sit in the clean area, right? Right. But he says, "Veloshen Rishon Hogan." But I like, he says, the first expression, the imkain, because if that's so, then lomali mishum kishofim sipikle. Why should we be afraid? Remember, before we said that if you don't take care of yourself carefully, you know, then you're liable to find that you'll find that there's magic being practiced against it. We want to try to avert, as we said, the mazik, right? All right. Kevan Sheyoshav, he says, if you already have sat down, then in that particular case, your garments are already soiled. What good will it do? So in other words, he says the first one seems to me to be a preferable opinion. Well, okay. But at any rate, as I say, we understand, again, the whole thing is modesty, but also health. Health. Because they feel that a person should go, and we'll see. When a person feels the urge to go, it's best not to suppress that urge. But it's best to do it, it's for your own health to seek to do it. And they are concerned about the health of a human being.
So in this case, could mashmesh mean feel to make sure you want to go before you sit down, rather than sit down and try
and... Yeah, well, the first one is right, exactly. Yeah. Feel in order to give yourself like a little stimulation.
No, but I'm saying feel to see whether you want to go or not.
Right, right.
And if you don't
okay.
want to go, sit down. But don't sit down and then feel to force yourself to go. Could it go that way?
Probably.
All right.
It's
fine. Sounds fine. Cool. Yeah. We understand it anyway. Give me what it is. Okay. Shekola yoyshev mamashmesh, because if you first sit down and then you feel yourself, afilo esen kishom maspanya, then even if they practice witchcraft in Spain, in other words, at the other end of the world, boy no love, the evil spirits that they arouse through witchcraft will come and attack them. So in other words, cleanliness is important also, because without cleanliness, who knows, you know, what will happen. So, I mean, we understand, I mean, that they were more concerned about Mazikin than we are today, although God knows the world is full of all kinds of evil spirits and things like that. But nevertheless, what they're stressing over here is the fact that regularity and cleanliness are two very important factors for human health.
I thought it was rather not religious to believe in Mazikim and believe in that sort of thing.
Okay. You raise a very good point, Herb. The fact of the matter is...
like a superstition.
Right, absolutely. We do not believe in superstition. And the Rambam very definitely does not believe in Mazikim and things like that. Nevertheless, we have to bear in mind that there were plenty of authorities in the time of the Talmud who believed that there were such things as evil spirits around. And, you know, they're out in order to harm human beings, okay? So we can sort of translate it, you know, in a different way, but we understand, I mean, look, there's also evil impulses in human beings, and
that's
this we know.
That's
the right.
You know.
So
can
then
you,
the, yes.
I'm disturbed a little
yeah.
bit. I'm just, I don't understand how they're implying that you can stimulate yourself to a bowel movement for a urination. Forgive me, I just can't understand that. That is a
well,
natural, unless you're not feeling well. And we're all members of the human race.
Yeah,
we're
right.
all moral men, but I think we all know that, you know, that there is a natural process that takes place. And what are they implying?
Nevertheless, I mean, I think you'll find that, for example, you're not sure, yes, no, I mean, you feel, and then you sit down, and after a while, somehow or other, you know, you're stimulated in order to do. This is also natural. It happens. So that... this is what they're saying. I mean, that it is possible to stimulate yourself in some way, you know, that you could try to attain regularity. Over here again, the idea is regularity in movement and privacy, you see, so that way, hopefully, you don't have to go in the middle of the day or something like that, you know, when people are around. Now, obviously, there are times when you do. There's no question about that. But if you could sort of train yourself, this is what they're saying over here, try to train yourself. That's what he says when he says, Yanhig Atzmei, right? That he should literally lead himself or train himself in order to do it. Try to establish a regular pattern if at all possible. Okay? Yes?
I was looking at Korach
Chaim.
Yeah. Actually, it's interesting that right in the beginning, Kirov treats the same point. It's the
yeah.
same point we're talking about.
Right.
It's already 500 years later.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like the same thing about the kash or whatever.
Right,
or
right.
Stick
yeah, exactly. Because you have to realize, Yura Chaim actually draws from the Gemara, you know, in order to make, you know, the halacha. Okay, the halachas are based upon statements that we find here and there in the Talmud. We gather them together, and then of course any of the later authorities with the comments on are also included. But that's it.
Actually, it's not 5 centuries; it's 15th century.
Right, right. Because here we're talking about something, you know, which was written not later than the year 500 of our common era. And the Shulchan Aruch, the Aruch Chaim and so on, I mean, this already dates from about 1500 or so. Yeah. Right. And of course, in the meantime, you know, there were other books of halacha that were written. But still, as much as possible, it is the Talmud which forms the source for the various halachas that we have. Okay, now, the inshe, and what if you forget, you know, and let's say the yasev, and you sit down, the achakach mishmesh, and then after that, you know, you start into, so maitakante, how can you help the situation? He says, kikai, when he stands up, leimo hochi, then he should say the following. And here we have like a little incantation, you know, in order to avert the evil spirits, okay? And what is it? Loli, loli. Not me, not me, okay? Lo tachim, velo tachtim. Not tachim and not tachtim. Not exactly what tachim and tachtim are, I'm not 100% sure. Right. But if you take a look, Rashi says, what are tachtim, tachim and tachtim? It says, Hem shemos hakshofim. It says these are names of different types of incantation of of magical things that are produced by the tachtonios. Tachtonios means hemorrhoids. In other words, I shouldn't get any hemorrhoids, okay? This is really what he's saying, okay?
Get the guy in the next right, not
me,
get
not
the
me.
Guy in the next
I don't want me, but tachin or tachin. Don't give me any hemorrhoids, okay?
So that...
Neither the tachin or any part of these, neither the sorceries of sorcerers, nor the
no, that we didn't get yet. Yeah.
Oh,
we didn't get that part yet, okay? Lohani velo mahani. Neither from these nor from this. I don't want either tachim or tachim. Don't give me any. Okay? Lo charshe de charsha ve lo charshe de charshasa. Don't let me be subject either to magic performed by a male sorcerer or magic performed by a female sorcerer. Okay? Last Rashi on the page over there. First of all, lohani lomahani, you know, not these and not these. He says, lo kulam, I don't want all of them, nor do I want kolomiksasa, not even any part of them. I don't want anything. And then locharshe, etc. So he says, lo mechashvos, mechashim zocho, velo mechashvos, machshefa nekeba. I don't want, you know, to be subject either to the magical spell of a male sorcerer or a female sorcerer. And then he says, lo shanachir, or another explanation, he says, the word hane in Aramaic means these. Okay? You know, it's sort of related to the Hebrew word hine. Okay? Mm-hmm. But hane is, it's more like haim and hain, mm-hmm. It's really in the Hebrew language, is what it is. Okay? Not these and not these. But at the same time, we also have a verb like mahane. What does mahane mean? It means that it's effective. So in other words, I don't want any of the sorceries to be affected on me. Okay? Mahane is like the Hebrew word nehene. You understand? So that's why Rashi gives these two different opinions over here. Okay. Anyway, now that we've gone through that over there, we're getting there towards the end.
I'm a phase.
Getting there. Okay. We're now on Samach Beis Amud Beis. Tanya, we have learned. Ben Azai Omer, Ben Azai says, I'll call Nishkav Shchav Chutz Ben Akarka. He says, you can lie down anywhere except on the ground. I'll call Moshav Shev Chutz Ben Akorei. He says, you can sit anywhere except on a beam. So the question is, what's the matter? So Rashi doesn't mention exactly why not to sit, why not to lie down on the ground. But there is an explanation given, you know, in some of the commentaries that it could be dangerous because of snakes and other things, you know, that might come. If you fall asleep on the ground, you don't know who's going to come and shepherd at night, you see, that's the idea. Now, as far as sitting, why can you sit everywhere except on a beam? Well, that's easy, Rashi says. Because he says, Shemet Tipol, if you sit on the beam is liable to be unbalanced and you'll fall down from it and you'll have an accident. Okay. At any rate, Omar Shmuel said, Sheino be'amad hashacha ke'istamor lefarzalo. Yetzio be'amad hashacha ke'istamor lefarzalo. Okay. Shmuel says that sleep at the time when the morning star arises